Good morning. This is Paula Granquist, and you're tuned into Art Zany Radio for the Imagination. Thanks so much for joining us for the show that celebrates all things creating and stories. And we are going to tune our imaginations together. I'm so excited about this show. You know, when you're making art, sometimes you ponder finding the universality in the piece. What is that human connection I want to make with my audience? What experience have I had that I want to share and explore with others? You want your piece to speak to someone out there. Some of it is that you want to not feel alone, and you might also want to share with others what this moment or experience is for you. You are a translator of human life, and the search is for the truth in the matter, the heart that touches another soul. We are always longing for human connection. And one thing that I find fascinating in a piece of artistic work is that when it finds staying power and holds relevance to our world, some pieces just have that something that makes it become a part of our culture, and others get lost over time. And I wonder, well, why is that, that some pieces have that ability and others do not? And I think as I get older, I think about and I find that idea of those pieces that carry on through time are more miraculous, more marvelous, and it's such an amazing thing. And I feel that through these pieces, we are peeking into the human spirit that travels across time. These artistic works show us patterns in life experiences. Stories and art can succeed in showing us who we are and what connects us. And some of those ways of living and being and coexisting create these starry and wondrous lifelines that reveal what we carry forward. And other works of art show us discoveries and practices that invite deeper exploration and reimagining. And that is what is amazing about engaging with the arts. I love asking these questions and exploring these ideas with you on Art Zany Radio. And today I get to feature one of my favorite theater works, and that play that has remained relevant over the generations. It is Ibsen's play, A Doll's House. I hope that you know Nora and Torvald and the story of their marriage and their family. This play first appeared on stage in 1872. That's over 150 years ago. And I think this fact is what drew me into exploring this work. How could this play from so long ago reveal elements of our world in the 2000s? How could I connect to this story and find it so entertaining and relevant? The play A Doll's House explores the marriage contract, the legal system, gender roles, the value of preserving your reputation, morality, feminism, and most importantly, humanism. And there's so much to talk about in this play, and I'm so thrilled that the Northfield Arts Guild is putting on a play that we're going to talk about today, and we're going to take a deeper dive into this. This is called Playing in Ibsen's Dollhouse, and I'm incredibly curious to learn all about this play on Art Zany Radio. So I want to welcome to the studio my guest today. I'm going to pop up the mics. Boy, we have a sunshine today that is right on us. We've got the spotlight on us today. So if we need to if you want me to drop the curtain, we can do that if it bothers you. We are here today with Mark Robinson, Rolf Craigseth, and Lily Schuler from the Arts Guild production of Playing in Ibsen's Dollhouse. And it opens up on March 3rd, but we wanted to get it on the air early so that you could make sure to get tickets. I don't want you to miss this show. So welcome to Art Zany Radio. I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe introduce our listeners to some of your theater experiences and anything you want to share to get our audience to know you about your world. And we'll get this conversation started. Mark, let's start with you.
Okay. I'm Mark Robinson. I'm a professor of Russian language and literature up at St. Olaf College. And my area of research is contemporary Russian theater, and so I've seen a lot of interesting things there, so I try to incorporate some of that into my productions here at the Northfield Arts Guild. I'm also on the Arts Guild Theater Board, and so we were working together to choose the season and wanted to kind of forefront women this year and women's stories, and so this play ended up coming up as one of those that we wanted to do. I've done a number of plays at the Guild. I used to act, now I mostly direct. And I've done Cabaret and Dracula's Death of a Salesman, Odyssey, and most recently Lend Me a Tenor just before COVID. And so that's my first post-COVID foray into directing.
Wonderful. It's so great to have you here and to have you share this story of this play. I'm so excited. We've got Lily. Let's hear a little bit about yourself.
Hi, I'm Lily Schuler, and I actually just moved to the Northfield area in May of last year. So I'm
welcome.
Thank you. Loving it so far. So I'm fairly new. I did theater throughout high school, and then I did theater at Winona State University. I minored in it. So I've been in a lot of different productions, but I graduated in 2014 and haven't been in a production since. And I've been really itching to get back into the theater world. And so I'm really grateful for this opportunity, and especially with this production, to take this deep dive into this really, really complex character. So
it is. There's so much to learn about Nora, so mm-hmm. we'll get into that in a minute. Rolf, let's hear mm-hmm. a little bit about your story.
Yeah, my name is Rolf Craigseth, and I work up in Lakeville. I'm an engineer at Dispatch Industries, and I've lived in Northfield for about 15 years, and, you know.
I'm going to have you use that mic, because something's going on and it's not working, so.
Well, I'll say it again.
Yeah, let's try that again. I'm not sure why. All the buttons are up and on, but the sound was not going through, so there might be something unplugged over there.
All right. Well, I'm Rolf Craigseth. I work at Dispatch Industries. I'm an engineer. This is up in Lakeville. We make industrial ovens, so my day at work is a day of how it's made, and that's kind of a fun place.
Mm-hmm.
But I've lived in Northfield about 15 years. And since about 2005. And, you know, I'm kind of an unlikely person to be involved in the theater, I think. But I found my tribe. And and so I like to get involved in just about every aspect of the arts here. I am on the Northfield Arts Guild board, and in my sixth and last year on that board. So I get involved in a whole lot of things.
Well, welcome. It's such a thrill. I think you've been on before. But
I have not been on your show.
Oh,
no,
well,
this is all
I know your
me.
Name. You're in a lot of things.
Yeah.
Well, it's a delight to have you here. I'm sorry about the mic thing. We'll figure it out as we go. That's what happens, right? You just got to keep rolling. You know that from theater.
The show must go on. Yeah.
That's right. And so let's talk a little bit about, Ibsen's A Dollhouse, right? And maybe how you first got connected to it, what you know about the play, and what interests you about this particular production. We're going to end with Mark, because he's going to tell us what's happening. So, Rolf, what was your experience before doing this production with Ibsen's A Dollhouse?
Well, you know, I'm no Ibsen scholar, I'll say that. I like all things Norwegian.
This is a good Norwegian play, right?
Yeah, and this is, arguably his most famous play, and it's a great story. One thing I like about being in a cast is that, you know, by going through it over and over again in rehearsals, you just get such a greater depth of understanding of what's going on in the show
mm-hmm.
than if you just see it one time.
That, you're right. You get to explore it in so many different ways, and this will be an interesting experience for our listeners too, because this isn't our traditional production. But I do think I can't remember the first time that I saw it or got connected to it, but it hooked me right from the start, and I've just been kind of reading and exploring, and it's such a there's so many elements to it, and I'm still always enthralled at how something from the 19th century can be relevant to today, and that is an amazing piece. And so I'm thrilled that you're here to present this particular production. And how about for you? Did you have any connections to this production, or why you wanted to try out for this particular show?
I remember in college seeing some Nora monologues and things like that. I actually hadn't read the play, and so when I saw that this auditions were posted for this show, I decided to read it before I auditioned, and just pretty similar to you, was shocked at how engaging it was and how much I kind of resonated with a lot
mm-hmm.
of it
mm-hmm.
And how it's still prevalent today. That's what really got me, and so I decided to take the plunge and audition, and just like Rolf said, being able to just each rehearsal, it's almost like peeling back another layer of the characters, you know, and just learning more and more why they're saying the things that they're saying, why they're doing the things that they're doing. And it's been fascinating.
It is. And so, Mark, we should probably tell our listeners, you know, some may not be familiar with the traditional production, so the storyline of that. So let's start with that and give people a little hint about what is happening in this household with Nora and Torvald.
It's a rather intricate plot.
True.
Rereading it, that's what struck me, was just how much exposition there has to be at the beginning to find out that Nora and Torvald have been married for 8 years, have 3 kids, and a very seemingly happy life. But then people from Nora's past come in and reveal some things she did to try to save her family. And there's a lot of, in good 19th century fashion, there's a lot of coincidences and sudden expositions of things throughout. But these new information about Nora's past and what she's had to do to keep her life happy and safe and secure also exposes a lot of flaws in society, both legal and personal and gender-based. And that ends up really creating some huge fissures within the family.
Yeah, and I think one thing I am fascinated by is how the roles of the man and wife in the relationship, and that immediately you learn that there are money control mm-hmm. issues at the start of the play, and that Nora's just come back from Christmas shopping and buying things for the kids. This is the first year they've had a little extra to go kind of, you know, get some really nice gifts for their kids. And she has these candies that she buys, and she hides them. And it's, I love that just the way that he did that in the play tells you a lot about what's happening, right? And she just can't share that she treated herself to these little macaroons, I think they are. And so it's a really... And that's very relatable to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But this production is not going to be the traditional, the way that we have seen it staged before or seen it presented in movies. So
I think that's a fair assessment.
So you must share with us, how did you approach this? When you picked this as the play you wanted to direct, what were you thinking?
I ask myself that about every day. when I know I was on the reading committees that we actually put forward this play, and then we were looking for directors, and I reread it, and I thought, I really don't care for the first two acts, but I love the third act.
Mm.
And I like some of the pieces. It's just that I thought there was too much exposition and coincidence and other stuff like that.
It's very traditional to the time that it was written, that was an expectation of how plays were structured.
Right. And novels and everything else. And if you have a novel that's 1,000 pages, then of course then you can get through that over a little bit more time as you're reading it. But in a play, it just seems like it's coincidence after coincidence after coincidence. And we found out that the play is in the public domain.
Okay, because it's 150 years old.
Right, and the early translations are in the public domain, which means that we could basically do anything we wanted to with it. And since my research area is contemporary Russian theater, which has a lot of devised pieces, I decided to approach this one kind of from that point of view.
And when you say devised pieces, what
does
that mean?
It means the cast and... director and other people all work together to try to create a work based on the framework of the original work. And so what we've done is it's a three-act play. We've kind of made it into a two-act. So the first two acts are kind of compressed into one longish act, and then the third act is very short. but we're kind of structuring it like the first act is a rehearsal. And so we get to see the cast grappling with the meaning and dealing with the fact that, okay, how are we going to do some of these things in a way that's relevant to people and talk about it openly? And so we address a lot of the issues people might have with the play directly in the first part, but as it goes on, we gradually become we gradually move to doing the actual play. So by the second act or the final act of the original play, what you're going to see is primarily the third act as written.
Well, that is fascinating, and I guess that you can play in Ibsen's Dollhouse then. Yeah. And so that explains when I saw the list and you told me that Rolf was playing the dramaturg. I was thinking, I don't recall that there was a dramaturg in the original production. So tell us about that character.
Yeah, the dramaturg is somebody who wishes he was the director, but he's not.
And for people that don't know that theater term, maybe we should start with telling them traditionally what is the role of the dramaturg.
Yeah, a dramaturg. A dramaturg is somebody who looks at the context and the architecture and the themes and the costumes of the play and tries to integrate them into the show, and helps the director understand the all the historical aspects of it.
Right, and so there's sort of they rooted in research and information and details so that the play has, you know, some grounding in what would have been the place of the play or the maybe a little bit about the writer or the times. Mm-hmm. And so that is your role. But it sounds like your character has some ambitions.
that's right. And this character is the polar opposite of me, which it makes it kind of fun to play.
Sure, right. You want to be something that you're not on stage.
Yes, uh-huh.
And so how did it feel when you learned that that's what you were going to be doing in this production? Was not the, you know, traditional, let's just open with a scene and roll through the lines, and you had to kind of work with, I assume you all work together then to, that sounds like a really amazing theater experience.
Yeah, it is. And I also play the Dr. Rank. Once we get into the serious part of the last act,
dear and confidant of Nora's,
is exactly yes, and so that is a very opposite character from the dramaturg, and it makes it very fun and interesting to switch between the two.
Mm-hmm.
Getting into this, I mean, my thought when I auditioned was that my name is Cragseth. There's a character named Krogstad, and I thought that should be my character, but I think Mark cast this very well.
Yeah, it is it's a wonderful cast. And folks, if you're tuning in, this is Art Zany Radio for the Imagination. We're talking about playing in Ibsen's Dollhouse, which is directed by Mark Robinson and opens at the Northfield Arts Guild on March 3rd through the 5th, and then March 10th through the 12th. It's Fridays and Saturdays at 7:30 and Sundays at 2. Tickets are $20 for adults, $16 for seniors and students. You can get those right now at northfieldartsguild.org. And there's all kinds of details about the production. It's certainly a classic work of theater, but this play goes into the depths of the play and gives us a little more contemporary spin on what's happening. And one of the pieces we haven't talked about is that this is sometimes considered one of the first modern feminist works. And that this is, you know, kind of, and there's been debate and there's been talk because Nora in the end makes a choice that has resonated around the world. And so I want to talk to you, Lily, about playing the character of Nora and how that has been for you to explore, you know, from this framework where you're looking at it kind of in a new way. You're presenting it in a really original way.
Yeah. Well, in the first kind of part of the show, multiple women talk about why they want to play Nora. You know, I want to play Nora to show that women have been traditionally subjugated by the men and things like that. And so it is interesting, like you said, that that's still so prevalent, why so many, you know, women might want to play this character, because they see current events and what's going on, and that it's still you know, women fighting to be seen as humans. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of consider it an honor to play this role, and a very challenging role to play. Mm-hmm. At the end, especially now that we're working more and more into the second act, to get into those such heavy themes and that choice that you described that she has to make, it just, it keeps getting more difficult just as you understand the circumstances more and delve more into her and how she is as a person. But from playing in the beginning as almost this childlike image of this perfect wife to, you know, what happens at the end, it's exhausting, but in a very beautiful way.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you've had new insights into her character, or new access points that you, you know, after you first read the play, you didn't know? What are you, how are you connecting to her?
Absolutely. In the auditions, even, I was like, I don't like Nora. Oh. After reading the play, I mean, I have a 3-year-old and a 2-year-old at home, and we have a third on the way in July, and I'm just, you know, some of the choices, I was just, what? No, what? How could that happen? And mm-hmm. then as I continued to, especially with her husband, Torvald, we've talked about this many rehearsals, but the more we hear him speak and the more we read into what he's saying, we're like, wow, that's not healthy. So you just, yeah, I'm definitely now just like, wow, Nora is clever. She's doing what she has to do to survive. She is doing what she knows. And so it's definitely, I honestly would say each rehearsal, I understand her a little bit more, and especially her circumstances.
Yeah, her complexity and the fact that that has carried through and remains resonant is, I think, and sparks conversation, is really a fascinating piece of this play. Mark, did you do any reading or learn a little bit more about this, the story behind the play, behind Ibsen's writing it, or anything you can share with us about what you've gleaned from trying to understand?
Yeah, there's a lot of, since the play has been around for so long, people have had an opportunity to do a ton of research on Ibsen and the circumstances surrounding it. And some of the things that I found most annoying, such as Nora and Torvald, Torvald especially referring to Nora as his skylark and squirrel all the time, I just found very grating. But then as you read more about it, you find that Ibsen had a kind of a protege, and he referred to her as his skylark and other things. So there's a lot of this background. Some of the background information we've been able to incorporate into our play. And so in some ways, I think an audience member listening to, watching our production will come away with some more information about Ibsen in the background than somebody watching a traditional production would, because there's no footnotes or anything that you can talk about. And what's been amazing to me is the degree to which this 150-year-old play and 100-year-old translation that we're using, that we based ours kind of on, the way that they still have a lot of things that we may characterize in different ways, like mansplaining. I think it has been astounding to everybody in the cast, the degree to which Torvald especially, but other people, kind of mansplain everything to the women throughout, especially to Nora, throughout the whole show. And it's like, wow, this is still so relevant and still going on. So.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's what's, you know, I think each time I look at it, I pick up a different angle or a different mm-hmm. piece. You know, I was looking at it yesterday and thinking about the, you know, legal structures and how, you know, the way that the marriage rules about properties and money management, and, you know, even thinking about my grandmother, maybe even my mom, wasn't allowed to have a credit card in her name, right, but had to have a credit card in, you know, her husband's name, and how it just, you know, that was very recent. And
yeah,
so,
70s, I think.
Exactly. And so, you know, there is a lot of relevance that, and a lot of issues that we have not worked through.
Right. So we've decided to actually not pin down when the play takes place.
Oh.
So we're kind of setting it in a broad American setting instead of doing it in Norway.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a character of a director who expresses some of my ideas, but not all of them at all. And I purposefully cast a woman in that role because I think that's really important. And so, and then we had a lot of the other sections pertaining to the dramaturg and the director and the costumer and all of those were composites that were written by the cast and ensemble as we were working through this.
What an amazing experience. I think that would have been I would have loved to have had those videotaped as you were even just bringing those ideas forth and trying to figure out, because those discussions must have been like a really intense graduate school class or something, I would imagine. What do people need to know, Ralph, about just, I'm thinking of the play in general, right? And the if there's somebody who isn't familiar with this work or those characters, going into it, will they need to be knowledgeable, or what? How do you teach them to enter the play when you're kind of mixing it all up?
Oh, I think Mark is the mad genius, and I
emphasis
think that,
on mad.
Yes, and I think that the way he structured the first half of the play really makes it a lot more accessible for everybody.
So people don't have to have any knowledge or experience with it, and it may be their first introduction to A Doll's House and playing in Ibsen's Doll's House.
Yes, yes. I very much feel that way.
Well, let's talk about the other characters in the play. So we've already mentioned that there was a dramaturg who is not, and the director who is not in the original. What are some of the other roles, and how did you decide, are there characters from the original play that got taken out, or how did you decide what to include and what not to include?
There are a number of servants and kind of people who...
Yeah, because I think you, in the description, mm-hmm. there was an ensemble, was that the word that was? No, yeah, the ensemble is what it's described as.
Right, so we kind of divvied up consolidated some of those roles and divvied them up, and since it's kind of a rehearsal, we kind of say, okay, this actor isn't here today, so could you fill in for this role for right here? And so we play with that, you know, mm-hmm. throughout, instead of having one person who's going to be playing the porter who comes in at the very beginning to bring in the presence and then never makes an appearance again. So we did that. The actual kind of nuclear family of the piece is six people, I think, or maybe only five. It's, of course, the Helmers, which is Nora and Torvald,
mm-hmm.
Dr. Rank, Christine, which is...
A friend of Nora's.
A friend of Nora's, mm-hmm. from childhood. And then Nils Krogstad.
Krogstad,
sorry.
You got him mixed
this
up.
This is not the first time.
Who works at the bank where Torvald works.
Right.
And has a connection as well.
Right. So those are the main characters. And then there's like a nanny and others. There were children who... make an appearance once and never really say anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't technically have them in the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And let's talk about how you, I'd love to hear from you, Lily, about how you make a rehearsal. And as you're kind of inventing this, how are you getting your scripts together, and how are you making it seem like this is, you know, both a rehearsal that's supposed to be spontaneous and actually something that you're going to do every night the same way?
I think I'll refer back to the mad genius concept, is that he has done it in a way that is very smooth and easy to understand and even write some things like I'll be playing the character Nora and then I'll break character and go to the director and say, hey, I don't understand why, you know, she's saying it this way. Or
so you have even a harder role than trying to be both a character in a play and a person playing a character in a play. Yeah. And then knowing and cluing into the audience when you're doing those breaks.
Yep. And there's a few people who do similar things. I would say Rolf is very similar, where he'll walk off stage as a dramaturg, come right back on as Rank. And so it's kind of it's fun and challenging for all of us as actors.
I think that's going to be really wonderful to see. And how much of it had you thought out prior in advance?
I had a few things I wanted to do, but I really wanted it to be kind of born out of the ensemble talking and working. So we first met in December, I think, for a couple times, and then early on in January, and then we would go write and then come bring back the rewrites every day, and finally settled on, well, we're still making occasional very tiny changes right now, but not very many.
Wow, what a great process. That I'm just amazed that you're able to do that. What were some of the conversations then, Rolf, I'll start with you, of when you were looking at this? So now that you don't have the framework of the traditional, you know, here's our, I have to memorize these lines, I have to, you know, think of these blocking and, you know, this relationship in the play, you get to, you're thinking maybe outside of that. How did you sort of figure out what were the things that you wanted to amplify in this play?
Well, I think that the first act becomes much more free, and so it's come and go sort of as you please, and then the challenge becomes, okay, how do you come and go without affecting the actual parts of the play that are going on elsewhere on the stage. And so picking your spots, you sort of have to be deliberate about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so will people see a lot of the same themes that they've grown to love in the play in this production?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, so like Mark said, the first half, there's a lot of creative license. The second act is very true to the play. And very emotional.
Yeah, that is absolutely true about that ending. And so what were some of the conversations, Lily, that you had as a cast in you know, working through what to, you know, make of this? And I just would imagine that was a fascinating experience.
Absolutely. Especially, I think, with how much Mark involved all of us in the process and, you know, even some lines, you know, with women, oh gosh, that is so creepy. You know, just being able to kind of, you know, say what we're all kind of feeling and thinking. And then, you know, in regards to the lines, perhaps early on a wee bit stressful with how changing things were doing. But I am grateful for that because I, you know, it's one of the most involved I've ever felt in a production and with a piece. And not just, you know, playing the character Nora, but because we had so many of those conversations, you know, surrounding how this relates to current day and things like that. It was a unique, never really experienced process before, but it's very powerful.
I can imagine. Yeah. And one thing I'm thinking about, so it's, you know, you're looking at it, I mean, you can't help but look at it through a 21st century lens, right? Because that's where we are, mm-hmm. and we've had these experiences, and we know the history to best of our experiences and lived world. And so, you know, we're kind of trying to translate what, you know, is going to appeal to a more modern audience. And I was thinking about that as I was watching. I want to mention to people my favorite film version of this is Doll's House with Claire Bloom, Anthony Hopkins, and Ralph Richardson. I assume you've seen this one.
I have avoided watching.
Oh, you have
Andy.
Avoided. Okay. But one thing I did was I took out that film version, and then I had a couple of different versions of the play, and I was amazed at how they did not line up as closely as I thought. And it was hard sometimes to follow because the decisions that the director made, even when they were doing the play as an actual verbatim piece, they you know, maybe arranged the words a little differently or put emphasis in a different spot or didn't, you know, one play would have, you know, and the character stands up and walks, and that one, this movie decided not to do that. And I found that fascinating too, that, so when you think about different translations, and you mentioned you were using one, that tell me why you picked the one that you did. It was 100 years ago?
Yeah, done by a Scot, so it's in a very stilted, formal English, since it's 100 years ago. But I found that a lot of the translations are basically pretty stilted. Ibsen was very particular about his word choices, and so the way he used them, and in the original Norwegian, apparently there's a lot of kind of resonance of words being used in the first act or third act, you know, so it all harks back, and that's harder to do in translation anyway, especially if it's on stage and trying to make it real. It's a very difficult thing because you expect the stage version to be pretty realistic, or else it's very difficult to read lines in a way that are that makes sense. And right, we found this, that was one of the first things we found as we were going through it, that a lot of the lines are just so stilted. How can you say them even with a straight face, let alone something? And some of them come across almost as comical now. And so we decided to lean into that instead of...
He does have, nicknames that they use with each other, as you mentioned earlier, Squirrel, which is, it's an interesting, you know, word that we wouldn't necessarily use today, but it's repeated a lot. He also, I think that I had read that lovely is is that the right word that she uses all the time? I think I've got that right. And that he uses little and an awful lot, which I'm sure he was intentional on Ibsen's part, right? To echo some of those.
And there's doubles all over the place. So it's Nora, Nora, nonsense, nonsense, everywhere. Everybody is saying twice as much, twice as many words as they need to because they're repetitions.
Mm-hmm.
But they're purposeful in Ibsen, but may not be as critical to get into the actual story. So.
Yeah, I was surprised at some of the things I learned was that a lot of the plays he first wrote, he wrote that were, you know, meant to be read, not even to be produced.
Yeah.
So that makes sense in some of these things that would seem okay if you're reading, but then putting them on a stage seem clunky or odd. And so what a great opportunity to do this play with Ibsen and trying to bring it to a modern audience. What do you think you would like, or how would you describe the the feeling you want people to have after they see the show, or have you changed the tone or any of the the style, or how would you describe what you've amplified and what you've want people to experience? Anyone of you can grab it. Go ahead, Rolf.
Well, I'm kind of excited, and I wanted to give a shout out to the show sponsor, the Sons of Norway local lodge, the Nordmarka Lodge. Now, which a little fact is the Norwegian word for Northfield, Nordmarka.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's great.
And so they will have an event on the first Sunday, the 5th, where there'll be a talk back. And so I'm really excited to see what kind of questions they come up with in that talk back about the adaptations that we've made and about how true we stayed to the show in the second half. I know that a lot of the people who will be there will be very interested in an Ibsen play and what we've done with it.
Now, is that on the Sunday, the first Sunday that you are in production?
Yes, that's right.
So that is on the 5th. If people are interested in getting tickets particularly for that one, it'll be after the 2 o'clock matinee?
Exactly, yes.
Oh, that sounds like a really great opportunity. Sometimes you do want to, after you see a play, just, you know, have, like, stuff is floating around in your mind, and you're like, wow, I wish, you know, I could go to, where's a place in Northfield I can go get a cup of coffee and a dessert and talk about this with everybody? That's
right, right. And that's right. Light refreshments will be served.
Oh, perfect. Perfect. And what would you say, Lily, about what you would like people to feel as they, you know, see your production and experience what you're putting on the stage?
Empowered was the first word that came to mind. I think there's so much pressure, and the idea of the image, like the director in the show says a lot, you know, there's an image of a perfect wife, there's an image of this perfect family, and so I think remembering that before all else, as simple as it may be, that women are humans, and before wives, before mothers, before the image of the, you know, whatever is projected on them from society. And that is, I mean, it's sad that that is still so relevant today, that we need to be, you know, telling people. Mm-hmm. But I think that it's important, and it's necessary, and it's powerful, and it's, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's something that I read, too, that Ibsen was interested in exploring, obviously, that dynamic. I think he didn't want to write about nobility. He wanted to write about actual families and relationships, and that he was asked a question, I don't remember the exact quote, but about, you know, how he felt about the, you know, the idea of people seeing this as kind of a feminist play. Mm-hmm. And he seemed reticent to embrace that. Yeah. Do you know any more about that, Mark?
I've heard the same stories, that he didn't consider it himself to be a particularly feminist work. It's a complex work. That's I think the best way to think about it. And hopefully our production will maintain that complexity and give people an opportunity to kind of ponder all sides of the issue. Mm-hmm. It was very controversial when it came out.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. You have to kind of imagine that, right? And it's 1872, when nobody was questioning roles. Mm-hmm. Nobody was thinking that women needed to control money. Nobody was thinking that they needed some authority to manage their affairs and to, you know, be, you know, an equal in the marriage. That was not even something that was brought forward at all. So when he put this, I can't even imagine the reviews. I would love to.
Well, it had to be rewritten for Germany, and the whole ending had to be rewritten because they wouldn't accept it as it was originally staged.
Right, and they changed it in a way that it was not well received also, which is a very interesting element, that even what they tried to make it softer, maybe, or more accepting, or more comfortable, the decision that Nora makes at the end. But people thought, no, we don't like that either. And that is, I think, why this play has so much staying power, is that it does let you reflect on those questions. Mm-hmm. And reflect, like, could I do that? Is that a good decision? Is that something?
Yeah, it's not supposed to be soft or comfortable. It's supposed to, you know, really bring up those questions.
Mm-hmm. And that's what art can do, right? Because you know, it's not it's an imaginary family, folks. And it's something where you, could this happen? How would this feel?
It's very interesting, as we, you know, took a deep dive into the text, that the first couple of acts seem very artificial in a lot of ways. But then when we got to the third act, I think it may have been you or somebody else. I think it was you, Rolf, who was saying, wow, these conversations between the husband and wife in this third act just seems so on point of the kinds of deep discussions a couple would have.
And even today.
Yeah.
A couple from today could, right.
Yeah.
So tell us some more about, you know, your insights into that.
Well, it's just, I mean, I'm trying to not sound like a creep, but I mean, you hear Torvald, and how he treats his wife, and you think, you know, I hope I don't do that.
Yes, right. But seeing it in a play helps you to say, well, maybe that is a possibility.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I even think of that in terms of not just our domestic relationships, but I, this time watching it, I had ideas thinking about, well, how we have, you know, race conversations in our country right now, and how, you know, some of the structural things that are hard for us to see in how things were set up, and maybe those aren't working the way we thought, and maybe we should explore this and yeah, have those all sitting at the table kind of trying to have those dialogues, right? Because that's what it ends right up is that they have an actual dialogue, and that's what's so frustrating for Nora.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That, okay, now we're 8 years in, and we're finally having this conversation.
Right, and that's what art does, mm-hmm, is it makes you think about things in a different way that you couldn't from reading a textbook or something.
Right, or mm-hmm, you can't even see in your own life, because it's so much easier to see it when it's reflected back to you, and that's the power, I think, in it. Mm-hmm. I would imagine as a cast, we should probably give a shout out to the group that you, yes, have, which is a phenomenal group. In addition to my guests today, we have Ralph Craigseth and Lily Schuler. We have also Birch Carlson, Nick Hager, Mike Manziger,
Manziger,
uh-huh, Taylor Markle, Ellen Odegaard, Lily, that's you, Taylor, I don't know how to say Taylor's, Wesson. Mm-hmm. Okay, and so it's a really great cast.
It is, and they have all just jumped in with both feet to explore this text.
Mm-hmm. So we really want people to come in and see this show. It's going to be playing, again, opening March 3rd, but tickets are on sale right now. You can get those online easily, northfieldartsguild.org. You can also go down to the Arts Guild if you want to go check out the gallery or the shop that's there. You can visit their location here on Division Street, which is, did I write down the address? It is
314 Division.
Thank you, 314. I couldn't remember the number. I just know where it is, right? It's that, yeah, purple door downtown. And the tickets are available for March 3rd, Fridays and Saturdays at 7:30. That's so two weekends. And then Sundays, both weekends have a Sunday matinee at 2 p.m. Tickets $20 for adults, $16 for seniors and students. And it is, I'm just so excited. This will be the first time this production has ever been performed, because you've invented it.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so now, is it possible that this play, then you perform it, will it be something that somebody else could then, you know, is how does that work in the play world of you create a script and somebody could buy that for another production?
I have no idea. We've been a little focused on getting this one. This one is fairly specific to some things in this community. Not the setting or anything of the Nora Torvalds story, but the externals talk about things going on here in this community. So not very much, but just, mm-hmm, it is. So there would have to be, anybody who decided to do something similar would have to adapt it themselves, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think this is exciting, because if you can keep things like this in the conversation, it's really an important part to make sure that these are openings that people can continue to explore. Mm-hmm. And it's incredible. And this is playing in Ibsen's Dollhouse, so it will be, we can call it world premiere, right?
Yeah. Let's.
Mark wasn't thinking of it in those terms. Well, you have been described as a mad genius, so people want to see what the mad genius has created. Any last words that we should share with our listeners so they make sure to get their tickets? Something we've missed about talking about, something you're excited about, you want them to see. I imagine there's curious about the stage, how you've set it up, and costumes and all those details that you haven't quite gotten a run through yet.
There's just been a few times during the rehearsal process that I'm like, Mark, I am fascinated with what goes on in your brain. This is so clever. Like, I wouldn't have thought of, you know, any of this. And so I think that's incentive enough to kind of, you know, see you know, the art that goes on in an artist's brain and, you know, comes to life. So
fabulous. Get your tickets now, folks. Ralph, jump in.
Yeah. The best plays, when my wife and I go to see a play, the best ones are the ones that we keep talking about on the way home and after we get home and into the night, and this is one of those plays.
That is a really good selling point. Bring your friends so you can do that. Go
absolutely
out for coffee or a beer and sit down and try to you know, explore a little further. Thank you so much for being here, playing in Ibsen's house. Mark Robinson, thank you. And thank you for making this happen. Rolf Craigseth and Lily Schuler, who are a part of that production. And we are going to, if you're wanting to see a play before that one opens, I want to quickly mention two more. One I saw last weekend, and that was the Paradise production of Wrong Window. I have not laughed out loud as much as I did in that opening of that whole production. It's just phenomenal. It's at the Paradise Center for the Arts. It's directed by the fabulous Patrick Brocker, and it has a great cast. It is playing again this weekend, the 17th, 18th at 7:30. So get your tickets for that. I highly recommend that. And another one this weekend on my show, a couple weeks ago, I had the kids from Treasure Island at the Northfield Middle School, and that opens up on the 17th tonight at 7 o'clock, and then also on Saturday at 7 o'clock. That's only one weekend. Tickets for that one are only $3 for kids, $5 for adults, and a $10 family cap. They were so enthusiastic about the play. I just loved having them on the show. I had up 9 kids. If you want to hear the interview, it's just adorable. So thank you, folks, for listening to Art Zany Radio. I hope you always take time to enjoy your imagination. And of course, in the meantime, until next time, add some Art Zany to your life.